Happy podcast day, everybody. I have a wonderful literary agent podcast for you today. Kimberly Brower of Brower Literary and Management is on the podcast with me today, and she is hands down incredible. You're going to love getting to know her and listening to her wonderful advice and experience on the publishing side. So definitely a good one to listen to.
So you blog. So what got you started? Can I ask you a question? Just because I'm
of course.
It's just me being nosy.
Yeah.
what got you into doing this?
So it started as just a way for me to like chat about books that I really liked. And I was in like a transitional period of my life and blogging and podcasting. And I was like, oh, I have some author friends, like other writing friends who I could, you know, have on and we could just talk about books we like and the writing process. And then it evolved into me reaching out to published authors and, you know, wanting them to share their journey of how they got to that point. And I did that for a couple years before I started, you know, before I was like, oh, what if I had agents on the podcast too? And they shared, you know, their side of the publishing process. And it's just kind of grown from there. But it's just, you know, a hobby, something I do for fun because I learn a lot from it and gain really good connections. But people who listen to it all the time tell me like how helpful it is just to hear from, you know, a bunch of different people who love the same thing we do.
Well, that's exciting. That's really great to hear.
Yeah. So it's been really fun. And the literary agent interviews that I've gotten such great feedback. And, you know, I think it's wonderful, too, for people who have, you know, like their sights set on particular agents. They can now, you know, get to know them a little bit before they query and all that stuff, which is cool.
I have such admiration for whether it be up-and-coming authors or authors that are just getting their start or people that are just going for it. I just have such admiration for people that are in that place and that decide to do it just because it can be very overwhelming.
Super.
And if it was me, I've never written a book. I have no intention to ever writing a book myself, but I just don't think it's just not my personality. I'm not that creative type in that way. But if I did, I don't know if I could do what all these authors do, all these writers do. I have such admiration for them.
It's, you know, it's something, like, it's been my dream forever since I was a little kid to be a published author. But it's terrifying, like, just the thought of somebody reading this book that I've, you know, slaved over for 3 years, it's pretty terrifying, but somehow we make it through and we do it. We put ourselves out there.
It's amazing. So kudos to you and to everyone that tries this, you know?
Right. It is pretty, pretty stressful at times, but also, you know, even though, on the opposite side of the spectrum, you are like saying, you know, you could never write a book. You're such a crucial part of the process. So kudos to you also for doing what you do and being a partner and, you know, a helper to getting people's dreams accomplished.
I know, it's a very interesting profession. I mean, it's something that I think when we were all, I mean, I'm not going to say all, because I'm sure some people were aware this the job existed, but like when you're young and you're reading books and you're falling in love with books, I don't think you ever think about this profession. You understand that there's obviously a company that publishes these books,
right?
And there's the writers, but it's definitely a job that you don't really strive to be in only because you don't really know it exists.
Definitely. When I was a kid and, you know, thinking about this, the role of a literary agent would have never come to my mind.
Correct. Yes. me too. So you're not alone. But I do think, I'd like to think that I don't want to say crucial because I don't think that's the right word. I think it advantageous. That's the better word. Mm. I feel like to have a literary agent that you trust, that supports you, that believes in you, because it's just one more person in your corner advocating for you.
Definitely. And if you can find somebody who, you know, is all of those things and is just as excited and as in love with your story as you are, like, that why wouldn't you want to be partnered up with them and work with them?
Exactly. Yes, I agree.
So tell me what drew you to publishing and being a literary agent.
I kind of fell into it accidentally. I did not take the traditional path that I think most literary agents find in. From my experience in talking to different literary agents, you either start like kind of out of college, whether it be an internship or a first job at a publishing house or at a literary agent, and you kind of apprentice and work your way up from there, or you switch over from the publishing side. You're an editor or at some level, and then you switch over. I kind of came at it in a backdoor way. My background is in business, and like I went to law school, I'm a lawyer. And so I came at it from a love of reading. I just, like I said, I did not know this job existed. I mean, I bet if I thought about it, I would have put two and two together and realized it did exist. But it wasn't something that is just an easy, like, you know, that exists, that you want to go after that, and that's your dream. So after I finished law school, I was living in California, and I met a literary agent who owned her own agency, and she, we were kind of, this sounds so cliche, but we kind of ran in the same circles online, and that sounds so weird, but in terms of, author groups, author networking, bloggers, and she had approached me and she said, I heard about you. Some of my authors have been talking about how you like read books for some of these authors and you like to give really good feedback and things like that. And then she was like, I'd like to meet with you. At the time I was living in Orange County in California and she was in LA. She's like, would you drive up and have lunch with me? And I did. We got to know each other and she knew a little bit more about my background and she was like, have you ever thought about being a literary agent? And at the time I was becoming more familiar with the publishing industry. Like I actually like sat down to like research it. And at the time I was also planning on moving back to New York, the East Coast, because that's where I'm originally from. So it was very kismet.
Yeah.
So I said yes, but I was very honest with her. Like, I am not in a place where I can be an intern or, like, work for free. And she was very supportive. She was a very great mentor for me. And how she was like, no, I will introduce you to the people you need to meet. You're moving back to New York anyway. I'm in LA, so it's going to be good that you're there. And I think you have a knack for it anyway and a really good network of authors that you'd be really great at. So she really had a lot of faith in me, which was really exciting. Looking back on it and telling this story, it almost sounds too good to be true, right? But it was all legit. She's wonderful. And shout out to Rebecca Friedman. And she, so that's kind of how I got my start. And I started in 2014. So like I said, it was just a very backdoor way. And the way I started was, and I approached my job, and like I said, there's no wrong or right way. It's just a different way. I look at things all from like a business perspective. And I look at things more from a like logic and business, and that's kind of how I approach the industry. And yeah. It also forced me to ask a lot of questions because I didn't come up in publishing the way most people do. I didn't assume things, or I didn't know. So I just asked a lot. And also coincidentally, it was during a time where self-publishing was picking up a lot too. So I think, and that was new to publishing. So I feel like I started at a time where everything was a little bit new to people. So it almost was luck for me.
Right, that worked out.
That was
out.
A very long-winded answer that you can cut in however you want
no,
to.
I love it.
That's my long-winded answer to that question.
I love it. I love that it was a little bit like through a backdoor way, because you are right. Most of the time it's like, I knew I wanted to do this. I went to college for it. I interned. And I love that it was kind of like not on your life plan of probably what you figured for yourself. But now here you are.
Yeah. And it's interesting because as soon as I started, and as soon as she explained what the job was and what I would be doing, I was like, oh, this is like my dream job. Yeah. Like, but I just didn't know it existed or that I could potentially get that job, because it's just like you kind of go into the, oh, yeah. I mean, I think I knew about people that were talent agents working in like Hollywood, like for like Hollywood agents. I think I was familiar with that going through law school and entertainment law. I understood that. And I was like, I can't work in a mailroom. I have bills. I can't do that. So I don't think it was ever something that I was like, oh, I can do it that way. Yeah. In hindsight, I kind of wish I did, because I feel like that's how you build a lot of networking. But I do think that I bring a little bit different perspective, like almost like an outsider's perspective on the industry and on the way things are. And I just don't always assume that this is how they are. I ask, why are they this way? And if they aren't working, can we change them? Right. So, which I think can be beneficial as well.
I definitely think it can. That different perspective, I'm sure, gives you, you know, just like maybe a different edge, a unique look at what you're doing and what you can offer your clients, which I'm sure they appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you said, you know, you've always been a book lover and have loved to read. Do you remember when that love of books began?
Yes, I do, actually. It's very nerdy. I think I was 7, and it was the Babysitter's Club. I read every single book by Anna Martin, and my personal favorites are her super special editions. Those are my faves. I owned every copy. And that, of course, spilled into, like, Sweet Valley High,
yes.
R.L. Stine, like, old school. Like, I would go to the library. My dad would take me once a week, and I would just sit there for, like, an hour and a half going through all the different books I wanted to read. I'd check out my books. I'd leave, and then we'd come back the next week. I was always, just in my family, I've always been known as, like, the book reader.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I was the reader that anytime I went to Target, I always bought a book. this is when Target had a much bigger selection than they do now.
Yeah.
But, or I would walk. I actually remember before I was in publishing, I would go to Barnes and Noble and literally just start at A and just walk the stacks of fiction and just pick up books and read the back, like look at the covers, read the back. I was like probably the quintessential, Target audience for most authors back in the day, where like it was because this was pre-social media. I'm like dating myself and giving my age away, but this was when you didn't really go online or rely on ads. There were no targeted ads or anything like that. You walked into a bookstore and you looked at books, but I really did browse the shelves. So that was the kind of person reader I was, and I think as people started reading electronically and I got my Kindle, I realized how much it grew to be. I became a voracious reader, I want to say, in like 2011, when like the ebooks started becoming a big thing.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to spend like $10 to $15 a book, you know, on it. So it became, you were able to read a lot more. And that was me. And I had the time, given where I was in my life, to read a lot more.
I love it. And I love doing that now, still going to a bookstore and just walking through the stacks and just looking at books and picking them out. And sometimes I found some of my favorite books that way, by not going and looking specifically for it, but just by browsing and being like, oh, that title looks cool, or that book cover looks cool, even though, you know, you're not supposed to judge a book on its cover. Sometimes that's what my eye picks up, and I love doing that.
I agree, and I usually keep that in mind when having discussions now.
Yeah.
With authors and publishers alike when it comes to covers, because as much... So I personally am not a cover. I do not base whether I buy on a cover. Like, if a cover is not that appealing to me, but I read the blurb, it's like the blurb, I'll still buy a book. But when back in those days when I would walk the aisles, a cover is definitely what caught my eye.
Definitely. It makes you be like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And sometimes, you know, the blurb isn't as great as the cover. That happens too. But I love walking through the bookstores. I live in Portland, so we have Powell's, and that's always my favorite store to walk through because there's so many good ones in there.
Yeah, I need to go to Portland. I've never been. I should come because I've heard of Powell's.
Powell's is great. It's the best place. I remember being a teenager, and I lived pretty close to downtown where the big Powell's is, and I would take the Max down all by myself, which not quite sure why my parents let me do that all the time, but I would take the train down and just walk around forever and go to the big public library and leave with like 20 books and have to carry them all by myself back on the train, but I just couldn't stop. I couldn't leave the books there.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's get into some query questions, because I know people love query questions. So my first question is, do you think queries need to stick to the specified formula? Now, this isn't like the submission guidelines of your agency, because of course those should be followed. But this is like the golden rules for a query, just including the who, what, why, the stakes, and, you know, obviously the title, word count in a very non-gimmicky way.
I think this is a yes and no question, and I promise I'll answer, I'll explain that.
Okay.
The reason why, I think it depends. That's my answer. And I think it depends on who you are as a writer, who, like, if sticking to a formula works for you and your brain and the way you want to, and if it gives you confidence and you feel more comfortable, because let's be honest, just kind of like we said earlier, it takes a lot of guts to send your baby out to the world, and it's scary, really scary, and I understand that. So if you are the type of person that, in order to press send and feel confident to press send, you are following a formula, then I think that's perfectly fine. I think that it works for some people. It helps. On the flip side, I don't think it's necessary if you, obviously meeting the submission guidelines, but I think you can, you don't have to if you feel comfortable going outside of that formula of it.
That's interesting. I like that take. And I think, you know, depending on the writer, and some people are just better at writing queries than others. Like, query writing is very different than writing a novel. And so I think those people who are, you know, maybe you need to break from the formula a little bit just because it's not your preferred type of writing. And, you know, you want it to at least showcase what your novel is about in the best way you can. So hopefully, you know, by breaking the formula a little bit could help some people do that.
Yeah, and I understand why there exists a formula. I think it's very useful. I think it's a good general, and it can apply to pretty much the majority of all agents when querying. So I think it's definitely a great fallback. If you want to try a different way and you're like, oh, this is not working for me, going to that format, that's great. I think you can't go wrong sticking to that formula. I just don't think, also it depends on your book. If you're like, you know, I want to kind of do this, I'm still meeting the agent's query guidelines, but like, I kind of want to go a little, I feel like authors should feel allowed to do that.
I like that, because I feel like, yeah, and I feel like this is a question that can be answered. It's very agent-specific, too, because some agents are very like, oh, no, this is how I think the query formula should be, and it shouldn't be any other way. So I think, you know, giving writers a little bit of freedom with it can be helpful, just because it's so hard.
Yeah, no, and I think the also another is, just reading, like you said, it is very agent specific. Usually the agent is very clear in their guidelines what they're looking for, and as long as you just meet those, that's all that really matters.
That is a good thing to remember. And I think as people query, it's, you know, I think people do it a couple of different ways. They can, like, not pay attention to each individual submission guideline because they kind of just want to get it over with. But I think it, while it takes so much more time, it is crucial and really helpful to make sure that you're really paying attention to each agent's and doing a little bit of research and making sure that you're not, you know, just throwing away your chance to have them really pay attention to your query.
I agree. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about what your number one query no-no would be.
I have a few, but they're not that bad.
Okay.
My first is get the person's name right.
Yes.
Which seems so basic, but you'd be surprised. And this can, I'll expand slightly. It could be make sure the agent you were querying is that, it could be don't call it someone else's name from either a different agency, because I understand people copy and paste. I'm not against copy and paste. However, you want to make sure the person you are sending it to is the person you address it to. It's not someone else's name in an agency. There agents in my agency receive things that are addressed to Kimberly in their inbox, and it just looks like you don't care as much.
Yeah.
And then to further the name thing, and this is just a personal thing, I go by Kimberly. I do not think you should shorten people's names unless they have specifically indicated it, or obviously on social media, on like Twitter or something, if they have it publicly, their name is it, that's fine, but never shorten or give someone a nickname. I get that all the time. Never do it.
Oh my gosh. That just makes me laugh because my husband's name, people always shorten it to like a nickname, even if he introduces himself using his full name.
Same.
It's the same. I don't understand why people do it.
I know. Same. That's definitely my top query no-no. I think my second one is, and this is hard, I'm going to try to articulate this my best way. Try not to go at it in a condescending tone. Mm. Like, you need this book. This book is going to be a movie, a number one bestseller. You need this book.
Yeah.
I guess tone matters. I guess be careful, be mindful of your tone and that it is not you talking down to someone, because that reads poorly. Definitely. Even if you mean it to be funny.
Right.
I think I will give people benefit of that and say, I think sometimes they think it's probably like funny and icebreaker, but you have to understand you're reading just words. You don't get the tone of their voice.
Right.
So even if you were to say it to me, like, oh, Kimberly, I have like a number one bestseller for you. It comes off comical. Right? It comes off funny. It comes off like, oh, okay, you know? But in written form, it does not. And you'd be surprised at how many times I get, you need this book. This is going to be a surefire hit. That would be another no-no. So those are my top two.
And
I'm sure I could come up with a list of more, but those are my top two.
I'm sure. And I think, too, on tone, like, don't be condescending, sarcastic in that way, but also don't, like, talk down about your book in the query, right? Like, this is, like, you might like this, so, like, hopefully, cross my fingers, you know? Make sure you're not, like, beating yourself up in the query.
Yes, like, oh, I don't have a big social media following. I don't need to know all the negatives.
Right.
Let's focus on the positive.
Right.
Yeah.
Just be positive. So what things in first pages will make you stop reading? Like, what are, like, big red flags for you?
When an author knows, hopefully, everything that's going to happen in their book. They know the beginning, the middle, the end. They know who all these characters are. I usually stop reading when I get confused.
Yeah.
When I'm like, who are these people? And I have no idea. And I've asked awesome authors when they give me things like that. And I'm like, who? And they're like, well, oh, it's this. And I'm like, well, you didn't introduce this. And they're like, oh. I think it's subconscious sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
because it's a world in your head, and you just assume everyone's in your head and sees it. And I wish that was it, because that'd be great. There'd be so many more fantastic books.
Right.
But that's one thing that is, if I get confused or if something really just doesn't make sense to me, those are definitely things that I'll be like, okay, I'm so confused, and I'm already on the like page one. I don't know. That doesn't give me much confidence in what the rest of this book is going to be like, which might be untrue. Like, this book might be fantastic, but if I only have a few pages to judge, and I'm confused, it's unfortunately going to be a pass just because of time. I don't have time to read a whole book and wonder, oh, will it eventually not be confusing?
Right. Like, will they eventually explain all this stuff that I can't wrap my head around right now?
Correct.
Yeah. Confusion is a killer. And I think that just, you know, goes to show, while you want people to spend a lot of time on their whole novel, right, making sure it's all put together, but it's really important just to make sure your first pages, the 5, 10 or however many that, you know, you send to an agent are in real tip-top shape.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and I, you know, in my, with my author, even my authors that like are contracted and have books due to their editors or like at publishing houses, sometimes the beginning is what they always have to go back and fix.
Oh yeah,
and that's okay. But I think that's what it. I think it's just more of, it's less about being very specific to the first pages and more of like, make sure you go through your drafts and like proofread, right? And like self edit, even if it's a self edit, and just to kind of make sure that it all ties together.
Definitely. So now we've talked about some of the things that, you know, make you stop reading or your query no-nos, but what's your favorite thing to see in a query? What are some things that you know, get in your inbox that just get you super excited?
When they personalize a query.
Oh, that's the best.
When it basically, it comes right off the bat that I know they did not copy and paste it. Let's be honest, I'm pretty sure they probably copy and pasted everything else after the first paragraph, which is totally fine. But like, if there's something from my biography, or like a lot of people, because I have Babysitter's Club in my biography, because it's an ode, or I think I mentioned somewhere in an article I liked English, this is weird, I don't expect this level, but someone that I liked English Breakfast Tea, and someone like wrote that, and I was like, oh, that's really like interesting. Well, it's a little scary, but in a good way. I mean, I think it just shows that someone did their homework.
Yeah.
Or it could be, it doesn't even have to be personal, like things I like. It could be like, oh, you represent really great authors, like, and name an author of mine. That to me, that just shows you took 5-30 seconds extra to look at something personal to me. So then I want to spend my time reading your query with just as much effort. If I show that you put in effort, I'm going to look at your query much more with like more of like, oh, like I'll sit up straighter, I feel like. I think that's probably the best way to say it. It makes me sit up straighter when I see that. Another thing I really like to see is someone, and you kind of touched on it indirectly, when someone's confident about their book. And I don't mean the whole condescending, like, this is going to be a number one bestseller, it should be a movie and all that. But I mean, like, this is my book. I'm, you know, I think it comes off when you're confident about your book and you know what your book is about.
Definitely. I love it. I love that it makes you sit up a little bit straighter. Probably makes you, like, lean a little closer to your computer, too. To be like, okay, I'm gonna read it. And I think it shows too, like how I was talking about how, you know, most people just want to get, not most, I don't know, sometimes I have felt like this, but you know, you want to get querying done. You just want to send out the emails, not have to think about it.
Yeah.
But to know that somebody was looking at you and really thinks that you would be able to help them and be a good partner with their specific story instead of just finding your name on a list somewhere and emailing you, I'm sure that that is something that is exciting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So my next question is a newer question that I've been asking, but I would like to know if you have any tips for previously self-published authors who are querying. And now, this would be with the understanding that they wouldn't be querying something that has already been self-published. You know, it'd be like a new story. But do you, you know, want to just see them in your inbox as like any other query, or would you think that, you know, mentioning their previous experience would be helpful?
And is this for self-published, for previously self-published authors that want an agent to be traditionally published?
Yes.
I think it's definitely worth mentioning. And I personally have no bias against self-published authors because a lot of my authors are self-published authors. So I welcome it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Shout it from the rooftops, because I think people that self-publish their books, it takes even more guts to do that than to query, I personally feel like, because you're opening up to the masses. Bring it on. Like, say, you know, I think it's great. I think some things that they want to, when querying an agent, I think they should make it clear that they're querying something new for traditional publishing, especially because there are some agents that only want authors that are going to traditionally publish. Right. So make sure that's clear too, because I have actually received some queries where I was unsure on what they were wanted me to do for them. So make sure that's very clear. And then I think that other than that, it's the same as any other author querying a novel. I feel that you should, I think it's great that you are doing this process. And I think, I'm trying to say this in the most non-negative way. I'll say an anecdote. I've received a query from previous self-published authors that want to be traditionally published, and it there is a, sometimes, not all times, I would suggest to avoid any entitlement.
Mm.
I published X amount of self books myself, so this is why you need me.
Oh yeah.
Like I said, I feel like you have a leg up in that you have had experience with reviews and readers. Again, 100% kudos to you. But for an agent, when considering you, I don't think that means that you are any more deserving than anybody else. I feel like everybody should be on the same playing field, despite your prior experience. Just kind of like a job interview, right?
Right.
So that's kind of how, that would be my biggest tip for self-published authors.
So again, kind of on the terms of like tone matters.
And I don't think in this case that anyone really comes off in like a negative, like that I'm great.
Yeah.
But in just more of, what I found is that some skip the steps of submission guidelines.
Hmm. Like, oh, those don't apply to me.
Yeah, not that they don't apply. I just think they may not think they need to all the time. And I feel like, this applies to any author, self-published debut, following an agent's submission guidelines will always give you a better chance and a better leg up than not.
Definitely.
No matter who you are. So that's what I guess that's the moral of the story, is just, you are going in just like everybody else is going in. They will view your query, hopefully, the same as they will view anyone else's query.
Yes. I like it, but I do like how you mentioned too, like, for them to be clear about what they're expecting, and that they have a new book for submission, one that hasn't been self-published before. Just making sure, because you only have, 300 words or 250 words or whatever it's supposed to be. So making sure, even in the query, that you're not getting anybody confused and that you're being clear about what you're expecting is helpful.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to forget because I think it's probably assumed. And I actually don't blame people, but there have been times where I've emailed back and been like, so what do you want me to actually consider?
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about? And I think for me, though, I think I get that more because I represent so many self-published authors, and my agency has a division for self-published authors, so it's kind of, I understand why maybe I get more, it's more a little bit more murkier.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just the me thing.
But still, good advice. Good things to remember. So what would your, like, top tips or top golden rules be for authors who are in the querying trenches right now?
Figure out a great 1 to 2 sentence elevator pitch. How, if you were to be standing next to a perfect stranger, how would you describe your book? I'll say three sentences. If you can't do that, you should try and work on that before query. Because if you can't just say, oh, this is a story about a man and a woman. They meet, they have a family, some stuff goes wrong, the end. Because then you're like, there's nothing. That was such a bad example. But there are a lot of books like that.
Right.
There are a lot of great books like that that have a really great pitch, a really great hook. I don't think hooks are really good. I don't mean, especially for people that write more literary, I don't mean that, like, you need a hook. You just need something, whether it be a great comparison, like, oh, this book is, if you loved Where the Crawdads Sing, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or something like that. It's a way for the agents to get a clear, in a very succinct, concise way, get a picture of what this book is.
I think that's super helpful. And that goes to the whole, like, confusion thing, too. It just helps set up expectations of what they should expect when they're reading the query, when they're reading the first, you know, 5 pages or whatever. If you can give them a little taste of it beforehand, I think that's super helpful.
Yeah, and I also think, well, I understand you, there are people that don't like giving away full spoilers. I'm one of those people that I love spoilers, but but some people aren't, and I fully respect that.
Yeah.
But also don't be too vague either,
right,
in your query. And this is beyond, like, the two to three sentence hook, like, at the beginning. I mean, just in general, like, oh, you'll see what's going to happen. You know, like, tell me something,
right,
you know? Because, for example, I only ask for the first chapter in my query, so I'm not going to know what's going to happen on page 150.
Yeah. Give a little
not
bit away.
Yes, make me. It's similar to when you are browsing the shelves at the bookstore. What is going to make that person buy that book after reading that blurb? I'm not saying give me a blurb, but there's something. That's the point of blurbs, right? They're like intriguing enough. They give just enough information for you to go, ooh, I want to read that.
Yeah,
that's the outlook I feel like people should have.
And I think, you know, again, it's definitely a different type of writing. So I think that's where you need to, like, reach out to other people, have people read it, see if it's confusing, or give you feedback on if they're want to read it or, you know, whatnot. And that's where fresh eyes can really be helpful to you, is during the query process and figuring out that pitch.
Absolutely. And I also think people that are, it's helpful to have feedback from people that are in publishing, whether it be other writer friends, mm-hmm, bloggers, people that are in the industry, and get feedback from people that are not.
Yes.
And see if, because if they're lost just by, like, reading like that, then you know, oh, this is bad. If like, average Joe, and I don't mean that in a negative way.
No, yeah.
But it's just, like, somewhat Joe Schmo off the street doesn't even understand what I'm saying, this agent really is not going to understand what I'm saying.
Right, because you would think agents would be more in tune to it, but if it's already confusing, it's just going to be confusing for everybody.
Yes, because I feel like someone that is because it'd be like your, like, for example, your significant other or like your sibling or friend, they're going to be nicer, hopefully, yeah, than an agent. And if they say, "I don't really understand what you're saying," then you know they're going to be nicer. You might need to work on it a little bit before you hit send.
Yes. Because you only have one chance to hit send. You can't revise it a week later and be like, "Oh, wait, consider this query instead of my old one that I sent you."
Yeah. So those would be some general tips, and always submission guidelines. I'm pretty open on submissions, though, meaning I don't need, like I said, I don't need a formula. As long as you meet what I'm asking for,
yeah,
I can handle whatever query letter the writer gives. I don't need to be like so wowed by it, because for me it's more about the actual writing book, not yeah, like the query letter.
Yeah, those are good tips. So when you have read, you know, enough of, you've read the whole manuscript, you're excited about a story and an author, what else are you looking for when you're on that call with them and getting to know them? What are the things you're looking for in a creative partner?
Well, I feel like for me, because I am an editorial agent, I want to be as upfront as possible with the person and say, "I love this book. Here, are you open to changes? Here are some of my thoughts. Are you open to changing some of the things?" So an author that is willing to collaborate a little bit, and I'm not saying they have to say, "I'll be a yes ma'am" kind right, of thing, like, and just say yes, I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah.
I don't mean that, because an agent is never always right. No one is always right. But I want them to be open-minded enough to have the conversation.
Definitely.
One thing. Honesty in terms of expectations, in terms of what they want from an agent, what they want from the project they're querying. Like, for example, if they're like, "I only want to be with a big five house," then just say it. You know what I mean? Versus, "Oh, I'll be open to any publisher possible." And then an agent brings them a deal, but it's not a big five. And then they say, "Oh, I don't want that." It's kind of, you know, I feel like being as transparent as possible in terms of your expectations is, because that's something that you and your agent can discuss and strategize. And as long as your agent knows that in advance, "Oh, this author really is focusing on big five, that'll be my strategy. If we don't get any luck with that, then we'll rediscuss, or, you know, we'll discuss again." I think that is really important, is expectation level. And then someone that is not afraid to ask questions.
That's always a good one. You don't want somebody who's going to be, like, scared to talk to you or ask questions. Yeah. I think it's just such an important skill to have.
And you may not have any questions, and that's fine. I'm not saying make them up just to make it seem like. But, I mean, I think you said it perfectly. It's more of a character trait. It's more of, like, the agent. I have conversations like this with authors all the time. And so I know, and I sometimes forget that newer authors may not know things, and don't be afraid to ask what you may think is like a silly question, I guess. But I think that maybe that answer was a little deviated from your original question, what I look for in an author. But I just, someone who is willing to communicate and their expectations and just be fully transparent. To me, that's really important.
I love it. I think those are great things for, you know, authors who are interested in querying with you to know and understand. And I think it's always what I love about these interviews and, you know, you sharing your knowledge and your expectations is just that going from the solitary process of writing a book to querying to signing with an agent and being on sub and revisions and all that, it's a transition from a very personal work to a business, and realizing that, you know, it's different once you get to that stage. So I think having people be set up with kind of what the process will be once you have an agent and all of that is helpful for people to understand.
Yeah, no, because it's very daunting, especially if you're new and you're not very, you don't know, like, how is it supposed to go?
Definitely. So it's always good just to have a little bit of, like, foreknowledge of, okay, that's what I'm looking forward to. So tell me what you are looking for right now. What is on your manuscript wish list?
I'm definitely a commercial fiction person. I'm open to upmarket, but commercial fiction is kind of my sweet spot. Mm-hmm. Right now, this is like, I'm giving you like my, like ones I don't really say too often, but it's very specific. the movie Clue, like an Agatha Christie,
yes,
whodunit. Like, I would love a book like that.
Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing.
I would love that. That's always been on my mind. Those type of books have been, I would always love a book like that ever since I read in sixth grade, The Westing Game. I don't know if you ever read that, but it was like the greatest book I read. And, it's so fascinating. And, but yes, like the movie Clue. Another one is, I like stories about, so basically any 1990s Michael Douglas movie I would want in a book. basically moral ambiguities. I really like moral ambiguities when it comes to stories.
Yeah.
Where, and it's not, I don't mean unreliable narrators, because I know that's something that's really popular. I don't quite mean that or want that. For me, it's just more of like, because I feel like there's no black and white, and I love stories that explore the gray area. So that's another thing. And then my third one would be, and this is something I really do not tell people now, and everyone's gonna, a really great, like, historical epic saga, very similar to The Discovery of Witch.
Oh yeah,
or the Historian by Elizabeth Costabile. Those are like my favorite books. They both have to do with vampires, but that's besides the point. I have no idea why. But in terms of just these like epic stories that you're just like so invested in.
I love that. Those are the best when you just can't get enough, and there's more and more and more of them. I love those. Well, awesome.
Those would be my top three.
I love it. I hopefully you get some of those in your inbox after this episode airs. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, me too. That would be great.
So I have just one last question for you. I have been told it is one of the harder questions that I ask, but I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. Not your favorite book of all time by any means, but just a book you've read recently that you couldn't get enough of.
I took a break from reading for a little bit, so it's not there. Okay. Really hard. That is really hard.
I know. It's hard to even just pick a favorite, like, yeah, you can do two. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh, yeah.
By Taylor Jenkins Reid. I listened to that on audio. So the both books I'm going to tell you are audiobooks, because I it's easier for me time wise to, like, when I read for fun to listen to them, because I feel like when I read I'm working. but so Danger of the Six, one of the best audiobooks I've ever listened to ever. But I read that recently, and then Anonymous Girl by Greer Hendricks, and I feel bad because I can never pronounce Sarah's name properly. So
I probably
so I'm not even gonna try because yeah. I'm probably gonna butcher it. So I'm not even gonna. But I love them. They're definitely auto buys for me. Like I'll buy whatever they come up with.
I will too. I've read, you know, everything that they have put out there, and every single time I'm just like, how do they do it? How do they keep writing just the best books?
I agree. So 100%. Good. I agree.
Awesome. Well, I love that you shared two books. That sometimes you can't just pick one.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to cheat.
Yes, you're good. Sometimes I've had people like give me four books to that question, so it's not like the highest number I've ever seen.
I mean, I've read books recently that I like that are good, but yeah. not ones that I'm like, oh my God, I love, I love, I love.
Yeah.
So those are the two that I definitely love.
Kimberly, thank you so much for chatting with me today and sharing about yourself and some query knowledge with us. It is so wonderful and lovely to chat with you.
Thank you. It was great. It was great chatting with you as well. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, remember to rate and review the podcast if you can, and share it with your friends, and reach out to me on Instagram and Twitter. Let me know what you want to see, or just say hi. I love hearing from you guys at Rose Quinney, Quinny.